Welcome, folks, to the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy Dowling. You know the drill, but each and every week I thank somebody. We should always do this first because I think this is the most important thing. Let's thank everybody. Let's get the thank yous out of the way and then we can kick into the episode. But this week's shout out. So each and every week I thank somebody that supports me, supports one of the podcasts, the band Lord, and it can be a range of different ways. It could be buying a t-shirt or a USB pass or a patch from my online store for andysocial.net. It could be buying merch from the Lord store. It could be sharing the episodes around, a bit of social media love. It could be suggesting guests. It could be messages of encouragement, reviews anywhere on the internet. Whatever it is, it all helps. It all adds up and it makes my job and my life a hell of a lot easier. And it keeps me motivated and inspired to keep doing all these cool things that I'm doing. And I'm certainly getting a lot out of it myself. So thank you so much to everybody that continues to support me. However, this week's shout out on public record, I pick one person each week, but this week is for Ross Phillips. Now, Ross is from Dunedin in New Zealand, and I'm starting to get a few more New Zealand people tuning into the podcast, maybe because of Paul Martin. I know definitely Rigel Walsh back in the day was the first little spike of New Zealand Kiwi listeners, but Paul Martin certainly brought in a few more, and I hope to get a few more Kiwis on in the upcoming months as well, the podcast. But it's great to see more New Zealanders listening to the Andy Social Podcast, and Ross, you're one of them, and you've come out of the woodwork. I'd never met you before. You've discovered this podcast, and as a result, you've discovered a lot more of what I do, which is so cool. And you bought a patch, which is awesome. And I really, like, please send me a photo whenever you eventually put this patch onto something, whether it be your battle jacket or a bag or whatever it might be. I'd love to see it represented some way. So thank you so much for supporting me, purchasing a patch. I've shot that out to you already, but please, when you hear this, shoot me a message as well, and I'll send you out something else because we all like getting something in the mail. So thank you so much to Ross, and thank you, as always, to everybody else that continues to support me and everything that I'm involved with. Now, you may not know this, but I also play bass in the Australian metal band Lord. Now, I don't know if you love heavy metal or if you even like it, but if you're curious and you want a sticky beak, go to lord.net.au. It is a fantastic website, in my biased opinion. It's got all of our video clips on there. It's got streaming music. It's got our whole back catalogue. It's got merchandise. It's a great way to get a taste of what this band is all about, what this music is all about, what I'm involved with. So if you want to go and have a little bit of a sticky beak, go over to lord.net.au and go and check all that out. In addition to playing in a heavy metal band, I also host the Self-Starter Podcast, which is all about small business, self-employment, and freelancing. So if you're working a job that you want to get the hell out of, or you're just starting your own business, or maybe you just want to earn a bit of extra pocket money on the side, go to selfstarter.com.au. I've got a fortnightly podcast that comes out. I've also got a blog there as well. And I've just really been appreciating the support that everybody's been giving me with this project that I've been working really hard on. I've got grand plans for it in the future, but where it is now, I'm just really, really happy. And thank you so much. So search for Self-Starter in the podcast player that you're listening through right now. If it's not there, please let me know because I'm trying to get it everywhere. And I just, yeah, thank you so much for the support. Lord.net.au, selfstarter.com.au. Thank you very much. And here's your weekly metal plug, folks. For anybody that's planning to go to the upcoming Dragonland Australian tour, their first ever tour of Australia, Dragonland are a power metal band from Sweden. I know there's a few Kiwis that are coming over and some people that are traveling fairly significant distances across Australia for these shows. So if you're planning to come to these shows or you've already got tickets, I have 25 exclusive laminates that are available for people that have bought tickets for the Dragonland tour. Now, these don't give you any privileged access or any special treatment or anything as such. It's just a cool little memento, cool little souvenir that nobody else has. They look really cool. I'm not going to post any pictures anywhere because I just want this to be exclusive to anybody that's willing to listen to me waffle on right now. I'll post a picture later on down the track after the offer's over. But they're cool. They're branded for Dragonland. It's branded for me as well. But it's a great little thing that you can have as a memento. You can get it signed by the band. There's only going to be 25. No extra ones are going to be printed anywhere else. So it's just a cool little keepsake that you can say that you're one of 25 people that have this thing. It's just a really cool thing. And so I want to continuously give you guys little offers, little exclusive things, little deals. And hopefully as time moves on, these things will become bigger and have more value attached to them, monetary value and all sorts of stuff. But we'll start here, and this is really cool. And so anybody that's interested, there's only 25 the way to claim yours is to email Stu at Stormrider Touring by emailing stormriderfestival@live.com.au. If you haven't got tickets yet, you can go to stormridertouring.com.au/tickets. When you do email Stu, just give him proof of purchase of that you've got the ticket and which show you're going to, and then Stu will work out with you how to collect your pass. More than likely, I believe they'll just be at the door on the night, but I'll leave Stu manage that with yourselves. But hopefully there'll be one available when you email Stu then, because there's only 25. Before I get through this, the Dragonland tour dates, it all begins on Tuesday, the 4th of September. They're doing a meet and greet at Utopia Records, so go out and check them out. I think it's about 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the afternoon, so you can meet up with them after work and maybe have a beer with them. That'd be really cool. Then the tour actually formally starts the following day, Wednesday, the 5th of September at the Basement in Canberra. The 6th at the Ballface Stag in Sydney, Friday the 7th at Crowbar in Brisbane, and then Saturday the 8th of September at the Croxton Bandroom in Melbourne. If you haven't got tickets, stormridertouring.com.au/tickets. Email Stu at stormriderfestival@live.com.au if you want one of those passes as well. This week's episode is with Shivani Gopal, who is the CEO and founder of The Remarkable Woman. The Remarkable Woman is this movement, this community that Shivani's created over the last couple of years. And it's this amazing resource for women where it's this, I guess, this close community of people that are trying to nurture and support each other and empower each other, all being women, to live a life of purpose, do things that they've always wanted to do, lead and live a remarkable life. And that could be in a whole range of different ways, depending on what that individual needs. And it's just a really cool thing. And this feeds into, I guess, a story that Shivani will share in a moment and her challenges as a woman. And, you know, I'll probably say a little bit too lightly, but women haven't had the best run. There's a lot of inequality, and there has been. And, you know, I think things are definitely getting better, but we've still got a long way to go. And what Shivani is doing is really, really important. I think it's fantastic for women to have a resource like this. And there are a few women that listen to this podcast, so hello to those ladies that are listening, and hopefully a few more listen over time. I'd like the numbers to be a little bit more, a little bit bigger, but nonetheless, I hope that any of the women that are listening to this will dig into this and look up the website, which is theremarkablewoman.com.au. Read up and have a look. It's actually quite interesting, and I think potentially, depends on what you want out of life, but if this could be a really interesting and valuable resource for you. And for all you guys, you know, and I'm a guy here, put my hand up. I would really encourage you all to listen to this and just really listen to it with an open mind and just sit back and allow Shivani to tell her story. Now, I ask a bunch of dumb questions. I ask a lot of stuff from a guy's perspective. So, you know, folks, I'm here. I've gone into bat for you guys. I think there's just a lot of questions that I had personally from a guy's perspective as to things that I need to consider, you know, things that I should or shouldn't do. And it's just really important because, and one thing that Shivani says is that equality isn't just about women getting empowered and doing all these things. That stuff won't happen unless, you know, men are equally involved as well to make sure that, you know, these things can happen and we can push for change. So there's a lot here. There's a lot of stuff that we talk about, lots of different resources and quotes and things like that. I'll have everything in the show notes over at andysocial.net. If I miss something, please shoot me a message so I can make sure that this page is updated. I think this is a really important episode. I think Shivani is absolutely amazing. She's got a really, really interesting story. And I think once you hear that and hear that all in context with what she is doing, I think you'll be pretty impressed as I am as well. So enough of me. Please enjoy this episode with Shivani Gopal of The Remarkable Woman.
The Remarkable Woman is a movement that is designed to close the gender pay gap and smash the glass ceiling for women everywhere. And that really excites me because of what we do and not just what we stand for. And what we do is we build a community of empowered women, and we give them access to mentors, we give them access to courses and gender pay gap discounts. So whilst we're advocating for change, we've got an empowered community that is benefiting and that is able to get closer to their goals, whether it be personal, professional, or financial along the way.
It's kind of like a little bit of a toolkit, a resource centre, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And in fact, I say to women who are members of the Remarkable Woman, we are your success partners, and we will do everything we can so that you can live your definition of a more remarkable life, and we'll give you everything you could possibly want or need to get you there.
It's pretty powerful. I mean, just, you know, when I first approached it and saw the concept and what it entails, you know, I guess the inspiration, and we'll get to that in a moment, there's just a lot of power behind it. And yeah, there has to be a lot of power behind it in order to, as you said, break that glass ceiling, I think you said. There's a lot to it.
Yeah, goodness, there is. I love that you said power, because I think that we are all born with an innate sense of power. I mean, remember when we were kids and we used to run around thinking that we could conquer the world and there was nothing that we couldn't do, at least at some point in our lives. I hope that every child felt that way. But as we grow older, life gets to us. The bump and grind gets to us. For women, the biases get to us, and we have barriers that stand in our way. And so we need something that is greater than us. And there is nothing better than the collective that empowers you and gives you the strength and the fearlessness and the emboldenedness to be able to go out and get them from the strength of everyone around you.
So I'll have to dig in. Where's the background in this? Where's the inspiration come from? And I could make a lot of assumptions here, but I'd like to understand, what sort of experiences that did you have that sort of pushed you to a point that you thought, I have to actually take the initiative myself and create this thing to help other people as well?
Yeah, so it's, you know, as I was saying to you earlier, Andy, around life experiences that get to you, I've certainly had my fair share. And I have always been a really ambitious girl. In fact, I remember being 5 years old, and my parents are incredibly social. So it was no wonder I turned out to be an extrovert. And they'd have these dinner parties constantly, and they would gather around and they would talk about, you know, the economy and politics and, you know, community politics and anything. And I would love to jump in and you know, have a bit of a go in my five-year-old, very articulate back then self. And instead of discouraging me, they used to sort of laugh and say, you know, gee, this girl's going to be a lawyer one day. And of course, I didn't end up being the lawyer. My sister did, funnily enough. But what it said to me was that, yes, you know, I've got a voice and I'm going to use that. And that gave me the belief in myself that I could do or be anything that I wanted to be. So when I was 21, I had already become a financial planner. I'd already completed a master's degree. And so feeling, you know, pretty accomplished and pretty unstoppable and therefore confident. And I decided, well, if I wanted to be the best financial planner that I could be, I needed to go and find myself a mentor. And not just any mentor. I needed to find the best financial planner there was ever to have existed. And so what you do is you look for someone in your network, right? And so I worked for a Big Four bank. And so I went through all of the reporting and I spoke to lots of people and I said, you need to point me in this direction. And I was pointed into the direction of this best financial planner. And we're going to call him Warren. His name's not really Warren, but we're going to call him Warren. And so luck was on my side, because we had a PD day coming up. And with any PD day, you've got a full day worth of sessions. And at nighttime, you have a wonderful dinner, a couple of drinks, and you really get to mingle and network. And so I went up to Warren and I don't really recall what I said, but I remember snippets of it. And I remember in hindsight, just being so endearing and, you know, so, you know, admirable to this person. And I said things like, I've heard so much about what you do when your clients just follow you and they're inviting you to their birthdays and their anniversaries. I mean, that is a measure of success. And because for me, the measure of success was the strength of your relationships and the quality of your advice. And this guy had it in spades. And I said, so look, I would just love it if you could take me under your wing. And I remember saying things like, you know, I'm going to shred your paperwork if you need me to. I'll prep your files.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, whatever it takes. I mean, I'm a professional in my own right at that point. But I was going to be his PA after hours if I needed to be. And, you know, you would think that, you know, that would be really well received. Mm. And I thought, I'm going to be really vulnerable and I'm going to, you know, give it all.
Yeah.
And Warren, I'll never forget this. And it's one of the reasons that has propelled me to start The Remarkable Woman. Mind you, I didn't know it back then. He looked me up and down really overtly in a way that made me feel small and sexualized at the same time, and also insignificant as well. So that feeling was just really crushing, but I'm still hopeful that he's going to say something positive. And he said, come back to me in 10 years' time. If you're still around, then we'll chat. I had a couple of other really sexist things, but, you know, we don't need to repeat that. And I was absolutely devastated. And at the same time, I thought, well, I'll show you, you bleep, 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 bleep. And it propelled me into this, you know, cycle of wanting to make sure that I could support myself and I could still be that best me. But it did take a toll. And it meant that I was working till 3 a.m. Mm. I was rehearsing and practicing and speaking to so many different people to try and get the answers that I needed. It took a toll on my friendships, on my relationships. But I did become incredibly successful. I did kick Warren's ass, by the way. when it came to rankings, you know, over the next couple of years, take some time. But it gave me a really strong lesson on the power of mentors and how hard it is without them.
Hmm.
And as I got better and better at what I did, I had more and more people come up to me and say, can you mentor me? So, of course, I never wanted anyone else to go through what I went through. So I was saying yes and yes and yes. And eventually, my goodness, there was no time to scratch myself.
I was gonna say, gone from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And it made me realize that good mentors are hard to find. But also, when I started mentoring, no one mentor can give you everything that you need.
Yep.
You need mentors. You need the plural. And you also need the help of skills. You know, your mentor is then going to help you unpack what your blind spots are. Now, you've got to go and help yourself. You've got to go and self-learn that. You can't get your mentor to give you everything.
Mm.
And so that started the bones of what we now offer at The Remarkable Woman.
When you had that moment where you put yourself on the line and you ask those questions, and as you said, you use the word vulnerable. I mean, you literally put yourself out there to say, I will go back to square one. I'll start to shred your paperwork, whatever it takes just to be around and just learn what I can and absorb your experience, your expertise. To get that kind of reaction, was that sort of the breaking point or the last sort of moment where that forced you to sort of propel towards the concept of the remarkable woman? In other words, had you experienced other forms of, you know, sexual harassment or discrimination and things like that leading up to it, but it was just this moment that was this catalyst to change?
Yeah, there were. And I've had so many of those experiences, unfortunately, and those experiences have all been catalysts to me forming The Remarkable Woman. And it's just been this rolling cycle. I'm a really strong believer in we are the sum of all of our experiences. And I have had many a time where I felt minimized by my womanhood. And, you know, another such example was, and this has been talked about, you know, a lot in the press, and it was when I had moved on from financial planning and I was now in business development. And one of the things I loved to do was I loved presenting because it put me out there. It massively pushed me out of my comfort zone. But it meant that whatever I was talking about, I had to be an expert on. Mm. And I loved the edge of that. I loved the thrill and the stakes that had. And of course, I love, you know, educating and investing in people. And so, you know, I was doing this presentation. It was a room full of about 250 professionals, all in finance. So, of course, that tells us it's an 80-20 split of 80-20 split of men versus women.
Yeah.
And there was a point in my presentation, you know, when you just kind of feel like you're nailing it, like you've got this.
The flow's there.
Yeah, the flow's there. The knowledge is on. Yeah. I'm feeling good about this. And I broke everyone up into groups, and I had all these packets of Cadbury favourites that I was, you know, throwing out for winners of, you know, pop quizzes. Yep. You've got to make it interactive, but they fall asleep. And I broke everyone up into their tables, and I asked them to think about this thing for 5 minutes. And I didn't know this at the time. And now a good friend of mine has actually divulged this piece of information to me. But he said that he was sitting on the table, and for those whole 5 minutes, that entire table spoke about me incredibly sexually, and were, you know, dissecting parts of my body and how I looked. And he was so disgusted that he walked out because, of course, there I was giving all of myself to try and enrich these people and give them value. And, you know, when I heard that again, I just thought, geez, you know, I mean, a man standing up there would not have had that experience. Yep. He would have been taken seriously. People would have gotten up and shook his hand and said, you know, thank you so much for that. I got so much out of it. And he would have been given that respect and regard that a professional deserves. Yep. And I didn't get that. And it just goes to show how much we're fighting against because of our sheer womanhood, which we can't change. And by the way, we don't want to change.
I was going to say, yeah. Please don't change.
But yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, you definitely hear stories, and I think everybody has an experience, whether it be directly or indirectly. So, you know, from a male perspective, you could be in with a group of guys and it could form a bit of a boys club thing. So then you'll hear comments made by peers or friends that aren't terribly appropriate. It could be a family member, a sister or a mother, or, you know, your partner or wife that is experiencing these types of things from that perspective. When you had these moments, did you always sort of, I mean, just given your background and being an extrovert and having that confidence, how did you handle it? Was it a bit of a learning, or sort of, I guess, a progression of building thicker skin along the way? Because I think a lot of people struggle with that and they don't know how to internalize it because the output's obviously what counts, what you do moving forward and how you take action. But I guess what I'm trying to roundabout way get into is what sort of things can people think about if they're on the receiving end of that kind of interaction? How do they manage it? How do they internalize it? What sort of self-talk can they give themselves?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And whilst we have to internalize it, I'd encourage people not to, and I'd encourage people to talk about it, because I think that a lot of these experiences that we go through, we tend to put blame on ourselves for some of that.
Yep.
So, you know, it could be, well, why was I wearing that outfit? Or I probably could have done something differently.
Mm.
And as you start to say these things out loud, two things happen. The shame is released and the weight of that thought is immediately lighter. And the second thing that happens is that as you say it out loud, you realize how ludicrous it is.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
And you go, hang on, it's not my problem. It's all theirs.
Hmm.
So there's a few things that I would do. And I find that when someone says something to me to minimize me, I then open that up back to them. And I ask questions like, what is it about this situation that makes you so uncomfortable?
Mm, absolutely. Because that's what it is.
Yes.
It's 100% that. It's, you know, just from my experiences and seeing those things play out, the people that are usually instigating it or making those comments are people that are terribly insecure, or they are being put into a situation where they feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
And unfortunately, for many people out there, the development of coping mechanisms aren't crash hot. So the way that we react to situations, and probably the key word being react, we often do a lot without thinking things through. And the consequences of that can be quite harmful.
Yeah. Yeah, it really can be, incredibly. And reminding yourself that the issue lies with the other person and not with me. And I don't mean that in an arrogant kind of way. I don't mean that in a blindfold kind of way, because anyone that knows me knows that I'm all about self-growth.
Yep.
And we've constantly got to be investing in ourselves. But when someone does something that is illogical and importantly disrespectful, because we all deserve the same amount of respect as the other person. Mm. And the problem lies with them. There was something that you said around, I'm just trying to think back to a question that you asked, around, yes, the sort of things that you can do and, you know, the reaction that I've had. Mm. And I've always felt that the best, you know, revenge, if I could call it that, is your own success. Mm. And to invest in yourself. And it's similar to my experience with Warren, where I just went, I'll show you, you bleep, 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 bleep. I just invested in myself.
Yep.
And I made sure that I was the best that I could be, because nobody was going to tell me otherwise. And sure, it meant that it was a lot of work. And sure, it meant that I still had to open myself up to be vulnerable with other people. Because after that, I found myself an incredible mentor who invested in me in just the way that I wanted. He called me a sponge. He just went, Shivani, I tell you something and you just soak it all up. And then it's like you wring it out and you come back for more. And I just kept doing that because I knew that I needed and I deserved and I was worthy of it. So you've just got to keep putting yourself out there and be on this ever self-growing, self-learning journey, because then you're focusing on you and not that other person.
It's powerful, and I'm going to keep using that word all the way through this, because I think that it's a theme all the way through this whole story. It's about power. It's about taking control and making decisions. Because a lot of this is decision. It's a decision that is made, and it's how you react or how you take something from a situation. And I guess from your perspective in your story is that you're empowering women to be able to make decisions and to have the empowerment to do so. And I guess where I'm coming from my side, is that there needs to be other decisions being made as well from the other side of the fence.
Mm.
And how, you know, I think I've got a lot of great friends,
yeah,
who would never ever think of doing anything of the such, or never even think to say anything inappropriate or make anybody feel horrible. But they might be in a group with other people that may be thinking that way or acting inappropriately. And so it's the decisions that are made in those settings around the responsibility that we have to ensure that those things are stamped out and those things are addressed, or that there's a bit of healthy confrontation about it,
mm,
where the discussion comes out on the table and it's like, well, hang on, we can't say that.
Yeah. Or
that's not appropriate. And that's a hard thing for, I think, from a male point of view, because of the tribal aspect of it all.
Mm.
We're in a group of guys and we don't really like to show vulnerability. And then if we start to call someone out, it's usually something that involves a high level of confrontation.
Yes.
And so to have a constructive conversation can be quite difficult. So there's a lot of hesitation. Sometimes we just let things slide. Let's go.
I think, and this is not my own quote, and I've forgotten the man's name who said it, but the standard that you walk past is the standard that you condone.
Mm.
And that's something that we've all got to start taking seriously,
yeah,
because change happens from you.
Mm.
And I don't think anyone should second guess the power of the ripple effect that they can create on their friends, their families, their community, and so on and so forth. But there's a really good point that you've made. So there's a couple of things that I want to unpack there, mm, if I can.
Yeah, of course.
And that is, you know, when you're in a tribe, I think that's great. And I think everyone needs that support, the sisterhood, the brotherhood. Mm. Mm. So much comes from that. And we as humans, you know, we thrive in a collective. But what is not okay is when that collective exists to put other people down and to, mm, minimize others. Because when you do that, what they become is less than human,
yep,
less than equal.
Mm.
And when someone is less than human, it means that they don't have liberties. In your mind, subconsciously, that is what you're saying. They are not equal to me, so I can put them down in this kind of way. I can overly sexualize them. And therefore, in small circumstances, where you may feel, oh, it was only this, where, oh, I was only drunk and I only put my hand on their shoulder. That's not welcome. And you did that because you thought you were more powerful than them and they were less human than you. And so therefore you had the advantage to do that. And that's the kind of ripple effect that occurs. This is where all of this, this is where rape culture starts from, in fact. And I think that those sort of things need to be called out. There's a great, actor and, and I would call him a human activist, Justin Baldoni, who talks about being man enough. And he talks about, the toxic culture of masculinity. Another person who does that is Terry Crews. And these things need to be discussed more openly, because whilst women are growing and, educating for equality, you can't change the world with only 50% of the population agitating for change.
Absolutely.
We need to do that together. And I think language is so important. So you said to me earlier, confrontation's really hard. And look, I get that. No one likes to confront. For some reason, I am the one out of my social circle that's constantly pushed into, oh, that's not okay, Shivani. Why don't you go tell him? And sometimes it'd be really nice if someone did it for me,
Flying the flag.
Yeah, I know. And it's funny because my husband constantly pushes me into that cycle and he doesn't like to be confrontational either. But what really helps is a language framework. So I'll take you through that. And again, this is not a Shivani original. I'd love it to be, but I actually learned this at MBA school in one of our first subjects, leadership practice and development. And we talked about how to confront someone, because remember, it's all about human behaviors, right? And it's everything that you do is always got to be with the intent of helping someone. I'm not going to confront you with the intent of tearing you down, because then I'm going to make you less than. And I respect you as an individual. But I'm going to confront you with the intent to help you, with the intent to educate you, with empathy and compassion, so that we can start seeing on the same page if I truly feel that this isn't okay. So whilst it's great to talk to your girlfriends or with the boys over a beer or champagne, in my case, because I'm a champagne lover, and then I said, oh, no, you don't. How dare you talk to me like that? Whilst that is such a great story, you're not going to win anyone's perception.
Absolutely.
Right. So a great language metric is to actually have a conversation. So you learn how to confront through language. And so what you can say, so let's give your mate a name. We'll call him, now I'm getting paranoid that I know a guy by this name. We're going to call him Barry.
Okay.
Because Barry is, we can do that, right?
Okay, sure.
sorry for any Barrys out there. But you can say, hey, Barry, I was really surprised when you said, and it could be anything that he said, and in this example, he might be, again, over-sexualizing a woman. When you said, oh, look at that woman's breasts or, whatever he said. Because, I know that you're in a really loving relationship and I know that you've got daughters. And I guess I just would have thought that you wouldn't want your wife or your daughters to be talked about in that way. What do you think about that? And it's just a really nice, comfortable... I mean, sure, he's going to get uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
But you're not being disrespectful.
Absolutely.
You're not raising your voice. You're just saying you're surprised by his behavior. And that's going to give rise to a conversation. And I think it'll give rise to the penny dropping for him. And that'll create some changes for him in the future.
I think a lot of... it's a buzz term, but the emotional intelligence is such a big thing in society now. I mean, it should have been for all time, but like, especially now, it's a big thing of focus. And when I'm playing through that scenario in my head, I know, and just saying from experience, is that when there is that healthy conflict and when that conversation is instigated and it's beginning and you're walking through that conversation, there's an adrenaline rush.
Yes.
There's a feeling of heat that rushes through your body. And I'm sure it's the same for women. I haven't experienced it myself, but for guys, there's an element of getting ready for it's like an offensive, on the offense. Your body is getting ready for an attack. Like if I want to really sort of draw it right down to a raw sort of feeling. So you have these rushes through your body. So the control and the delivery of that message is so critical, because if you allow the physical aspects to take over, then suddenly your tone changes. You become far more aggressive, far more blunt and direct, passive aggressive. And then the person receiving that feedback is also having a similar reaction as well. So a lot of guys shy away from it because of these physical things that happen. It's no excuse, because I think with better emotional intelligence and self-awareness, you can get better at that. But I know a lot of guys that will not have that conversation. I've certainly been that in the past, where I just, the physical reaction, I just do not want to feel, because I can't control that, or haven't developed the social skills or my emotional skills to be able to correctly manage that properly. So for me, looking at the risk management, it's better just to not do anything, because I can't control what's going to happen next. Or it's even the fear of, I can't control the person on the receiving end and how they're going to react to it. So I think that's, and I could be overgeneralizing it. Mm. And it's only just from, I guess, the experiences that I've had and the experiences that I've seen. It can be a real challenge. But I do know, and from my own experience, that I've certainly got better at doing this. And I've certainly had healthy conflict over the years. And that's come from my own development. Yeah. And me understanding how I tick, how I react in situations, and understanding that certain physical feelings that kick in, or certain feelings, self-doubt, or any sort of negative self-talk that kicks in, I can identify it and understand that it's not appropriate, and I can continue on with the intent of why I'm communicating in this moment. But it's very, very difficult. And I think it's getting better. And I think society in general, I think there's, I mean, maybe I'm associating with people that are trying to improve themselves. But I seem to see that it is improving, and it's being talked about a lot more, which is half the battle. But that's a big thing. It's a big challenge, because I think a lot of people don't want to be around that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't want to be in that situation where somebody makes an inappropriate comment and you sit there and think, oh, did you really say that?
Yeah.
And then you sit there and go, now do I say something or don't I? If I say something, I've got all these rushes, all this adrenaline's going to kick in. I'm going to have this uncomfortable feeling, and I don't want to feel like that. But then if I don't say anything, that feeling could be just as bad or worse.
It'll start to multiply.
Absolutely. So it is a challenge. And I think sometimes reinforcing certain things about, and I can't remember the quote exactly, but what the standard that you walk past is the standard that you keep, something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely.
So things like that are getting reinforced out there in the public domain, I think will help people face some fears and actually face a bit more and embrace a bit more healthy conflict.
Mm. And I think it's a sense of responsibility.
Yep.
We all have a sense of responsibility to make this world a better place and to make it safer for everybody.
Yep.
You know, we've just had the 39th woman killed in Australia. You know, it's a devastating number. And you think, well, what can I do about it? Goodness, you could do so much. And I think what I would say to all women and men, get comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to grow without being uncomfortable. So do it every time that you can, but do it with the intent of compassion and help and empathy. Do it because that person deserves it, and so do you.
It's I think from a growth point of view, and I'm sure I was looking at some of your books that you got up on the bookshelf as well. And just doing a little bit of, looking online and seeing some of the stuff that you're involved with and the way that you hold yourself, you're big on self-development. And just, reflecting briefly on some of your history and your career progression as well, that's a really important thing for you.
It is
always trying to be better and find ways to improve personally and professionally, etc. And I think I think that the more that people embrace that and have the drive and the urge, the hunger to want to get better instead of just, I guess, floating through life on autopilot, the more that people will embrace things such as you need to be uncomfortable, you need to challenge yourself in order to get better. And that involves getting into situations where you might feel that you're out of your depth a little bit, but how the hell are you going to learn without doing it? So I think there's more people out there that have got better access to information, better resources. I mean, for you, what you've created now is fantastic, because now women have another resource out there that is not one-dimensional. It's multidimensional. There's so many different aspects to it. And this will be my fantastic segue, where there's a number of different things at their disposal to be able to support them and teach them that growth is so important. And finding mentors, which I'd like to dig into a little bit more as well, that it's not just on you to try and work it all out yourself. You need to leverage off people around you. You need the resources, not just resources, because you can read a bunch of books and take in information, but that can only go so far. You need people around you. You need to surround yourself with excellence, with
I love the theory of excellence.
And just achievement and fantastic things, you know, all these behaviors that you want in your life, and you've got to surround yourself with that. And, you know, it's said to death, but it's the, you know, you're the sum of the five people that you spend the most amount of time with.
Totally.
And I think a lot of people know it, but don't actually play it out.
Don't do anything about it. And it's funny, we just, I just wrote a blog actually about that. You know, if you want to live a good life, take an audit of your friends and the people that you spend the most time with, because they are the people who will either lift you up or push you down. And it's so important. Your environment is so important. Your friends make a big part of that environment. And I think that when you go down a self-growth, when you go up, I should say, a self-growth journey, it starts to make a lot of people around you either really happy for you or really uncomfortable for themselves, because it holds a mirror up to where they're at in life. And you'll know who those people are immediately, because they will start to hold you back. A good example would be, if you're going through, a very common example would be, you're not drinking for 30 days, sorry, you're doing dry July. And they're like, oh, you don't want to do dry July. Oh, that's so boring. Come and have a drink with me. Why? Because they need someone to be back at their level so that they can continue being who they are. They're not ready to grow as yet. And that's okay if that's who they are. I do hope that they see the light someday, because it's, we all want more for ourselves. We all want to be happy and fulfilled, but importantly, to meet our ever-growing potential. But when you're ready for you, just keep your eyes wide open for that and make sure that you surround yourself with other growth-orientated people, because you will grow beyond your wildest dreams if you do.
And I think, I mean, not that we'll spend a lot of time on this, but it, something that I think is worth highlighting is that a lot of people struggle with making that adjustment, making that change, for two main reasons that come to mind straight away. One is that I think there's a myth around that you need to disconnect and cut people off, this very extreme version of I'm not talking to that person anymore and that's it. And sometimes that might be appropriate if that person is just completely toxic and is not adding any value in your life whatsoever. But some people you might have a fantastic relationship with, but their view on life is just a little bit pessimistic. They might be looking for the risk all the time rather than the opportunity. And it might not be completely necessary that you have to cut them off, because sometimes cutting someone off dramatically could actually cause a lot more problems for people as well. From your perspective, is there something that people need to keep in mind when, I mean, because I think people just think that, yes, okay, you're the sum of the people that you spend the most amount of time with, but it doesn't just have to be that. So for me, I've got a few ideas of how you can manage that, but I'd like to, from your experience, what some things that you maybe have done yourself or have seen other people do.
Yeah, sure. So I've got, you know, a very diverse group of friends, and I love them all to bits and pieces. And there's only one person I've ever cut out of my life, and it was because this person had, I have a very strong values, you know, compass, if you like, and this person had crossed it in a very overt way. But aside from that, the way that I did it was I picked myself up and put myself into circles where I felt as though I could grow and learn from others. So I went to MBA school and I started doing my MBA, and the cohort of people that I was around was magnetic for me. And I used to, sometimes I'd come home to my husband and go, I was with my kind of people. And it's funny, you know, this isn't something that I consciously did when I set up The Remarkable Woman, but it's happened beautifully, is that we've got this like-minded group of ambitious women who all want more for their lives. And I mean ambitious in different ways. They could be ambitious about being, you know, the best mums that they can be. They could be ambitious about their careers. Success means different things to different people. But I was speaking to a member yesterday, and sometimes I like to call in and say hello myself. And I called her and I said, look, I just want to know how you're finding it and, you know, why you joined us. Because that for me is my little motivation, you know, tonic.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, you know, ordinarily people say, what's the mentors and so forth, or the courses. But she said, I just love being around these rock star women who lift me up. And she wasn't talking about the mentors. She was talking about the other members. She was talking about the community. And I just kind of went, oh my God, I've created the cohort. And so that's how you do it. You go find your tribe, a positive tribe, and you put yourself in it. And you know, another example is mentors as well. You know, you've got all these mentors that will uplift you, and they will be the person that you'll end up spending a lot of time with. And through all that positivity, you're going to go and meet that friend that you think just needs a little bit of sparkle in their lives. And your energy is going to invigorate them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just from, I guess, personal experiences and people that are very close to me that have gone through these moments of friction where they're wondering whether they just cut somebody off completely. And the result of that has been that they've found some, I guess, a bit of balance where they've been able to, I guess, reduce the amount of time that they spend with these people. You know, some people might have several phone conversations a day because they're just so close, and they have a great relationship where 90% of the time they're just gossiping and just, you know, not saying anything of great meaning, but it's entertaining and they've got great rapport. But by reducing that amount of communication, or the amount of times that you meet up with that person, you're not necessarily sending the wrong signals or that you're cutting things off. You're changing the balance. You're shifting the amount of time that you invest in particular people. And it doesn't even have to be a face-to-face conversation with someone saying, I'm actually not going to spend as much time with you anymore. It is just something that naturally happens. And I think just from what you said, if you're actively going out there and searching for people that are like-minded, then naturally over time, the other people, or the amount of time that you spend with other people that might not be providing you with as much value and I guess those great qualities will reduce the amount of time. So it might not be a conscious decision where you have to really sort of make that snap decision with somebody. It can be something that is a natural flow and effect from surrounding yourself with different people as well. But obviously, depending on the circumstances, sometimes the cutting of the cord is extremely, extremely important and needs to be done.
Yeah, look, it is, and it's incredibly painful. It is genuinely like a breakup.
Yep.
You know, and you feel all of the ups and downs that come along with it. And I think you've just got to keep your eye on the greater good. And if it's right for you, it's something that you've got to follow through with.
Absolutely. With The Remarkable Woman and having, I was going to focus on the mentors a little bit, but I think it's interesting that just that little story that you said about that person that you spoke to and them feeding off the wider membership, the wider community of people that have signed up. And you've created this place where people are all coming in, they all want the same thing in their own unique way, but they're all feeding off each other. And for you personally, because you've created this is your concept, what have you learned by creating this from and having the exposure? So now, I mean, you've surrounded yourself with these fantastic mentors that have helped you develop yourself over the years, but to this level now with so many people that you're surrounded with. What's that done for you?
You know, it's been, it's the first time I've ever been asked this question, actually. It's, yeah, it's been a really self-renewing process, actually. And it's reminded me of how similar we all are. For example, one of the things that we do when we onboard women onto the membership, we don't sort of just, you know, bring them on. We actually get one of our member community managers to speak with them and to help them flesh out what their goals are over the next 12 months. And it's all published, so we actually get their consent, but all of the community members can see that because it means that you've got a tribe of cheerleaders, you've got your own squad. But it also means you're accountable to all these people. Scary. They know what you're working towards. In 12 months' time, they're probably going to ask you, hey, how did you go with that?
Yep.
You know, you always wanted to write your own book. Did you, you know, where are you up to? What chapter are you up to? It's not even did you start. It's what chapter are you up to?
Absolutely. Yep.
You know, and there's so many, you know, derivatives of that depending on the goal. But we also ask, what kind of challenges are you experiencing? What are your learning gaps? And it's made me realize that we all suffer from the same self-doubt and the same level of imposter syndrome, no matter where we are in our lives. I tend to say that our community is, you know, they comprise the four different sort of archetypes of women, you know, in different stages of their life. One who is early in her career to the first 5 years, the second group who is looking to get into a specialist role or a leadership role. The third is they're setting up their own business or they're in leadership and they're just loving life. And the fourth is they're in, you know, pretty senior leadership and they want to, you know, be an influencer, a thought leader, but also find their own tribe because there's so few of those women, unfortunately, in the world. But across all four, they all have this sense of, oh, I really want to be more confident and feel like I really own my own sense of brand. And it's funny because I meet some of these women and I'm in awe of them. You know, I feel like, you know, their shadow of their brilliance walks in before they do. And when I read that, I go, oh my God. You know, we've all got this in common. And I actually don't even mean this in a bad way. I'm saying this because I want to release my own shame. And that's my vulnerability moment. Yep. But everybody else's shame around feeling like an imposter from time to time, around having self-doubt. And I just want to say that that doesn't make you less capable. That doesn't mean that you can't walk into that meeting and completely nail it. It just means you're human.
Yeah.
It just means you're in touch with the good and the bad. And it means you're working on it. And trust me, that is so much better than people that think they've got it all in life, because you need to keep growing. Otherwise, someone will supersede you.
And it must be an amazing feeling to see that. And even just from a pride point of view, that you've created something that is giving a space where people can freely express themselves that way without the external pressures, the resistance, the friction, the things that we've been speaking about out in the public domain that, you know, women have had to deal with, for a lack of better term, for so many years. And so you've got this space now for people to be able to talk. And so I'm having an assumption here, but I'm guessing that must be a pretty incredible feeling to be able to sit back and, well, not just sit back, but participate, but to be able to sit back and look at it and go, this is incredible.
Yeah, it really is. There are times that I can't sleep because I just so full.
Yep.
You know, of happiness to have done this.
And it must be an exciting space for the women to be in, because you're not just finding that reassurance and that space where you can feel vulnerable and talk about things that mean a lot to you, but it also would no doubt open up a whole range of opportunities. You know, there's always that talk about luck and people getting lucky, but lucky having luck comes from hard work and putting yourself in a position where opportunity comes your way, and then that's luck.
Yes.
So for you to have this space where people can congregate and communicate together, then that element of luck, that opportunity, would be increased, amplified so much more. So no doubt people are getting a lot of fantastic mental health opportunities of being able to just express themselves and have a collective of supportive people. But there's also real development there, real opportunity for them to be able to, as you said, putting their goals out there so everybody can see them being held accountable. But I would assume also that people are probably trading expertise as well. You know, someone wants to do something, and so somebody else can chime in and say, well, actually, I have a background in this. Maybe
absolutely.
I can help out. Yeah.
Yeah, and that, and friendships are being made, and women are looking at each other's profiles and going, oh my God, one really sort of, you know, cute example actually is we've got a couple of members who have always wanted to set up, their own sort of online store. And we had two other members who wanted to do the same thing, and they just spotted each other and went, oh, we should really connect. And so we actually just connected them all, and they're doing it together now.
Fantastic.
You know, and it's sort of become this little accelerator environment where you're meeting these like-minded people with like-minded goals, and all of a sudden I'm not the only one in my circle, in my friendship group who wants to do this. I've got three other people in this one community, and we're going to go and do it together. And so you feel supported, and you've got some friends along the way who'll do it with you.
That's great. Women need something like this, and we've touched on all the reasons why. But from a guy point of view, geez, we have a lot of opportunities, and we're lucky. And as I said before we started recording, we've had a pretty good run. We get a lot of great opportunities without even putting a great deal of effort in. But the concept and the model that's created is fantastic. And I think people in general can get a lot of value out of this. Even from my perspective, looking in, to know that there's women being empowered. And I think about, my wife, I think about my family members, I think about my friends, and if all of them are getting the encouragement and the support that they need, and they get to do what they want to do, and they feel fulfilled, then that's great for everybody. There's emotional benefits, there's benefits for society in general, in every single facet. There's so many great things. I mean, what I'm saying is very obvious, but it doesn't often get said.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we sit back and go, oh, well, yeah, no, it sounds nice that, women get to do what they want to do. But no, this is like the potential there is incredible. We've been weighted on the other end of the spectrum for so long. And we've just missed out on so many opportunities over the years, having a balance of perspective, having, a balance of expertise and different people bringing different things to the table. And what you're doing is really important.
Thank you.
Can you dig in just a little bit about, I guess, if I know somebody who might be intrigued or interested in being a part of it, do you just want to dig in a little bit about what is there, what's available, and what people should consider? Because one of the things that we spoke about beforehand, and I'll quickly throw this in, is when I first discovered The Remarkable Woman and I looked at your media clips and watching you present yourself and your career as well, I had the perception, and I made an incorrect assumption, that The Remarkable Woman was tailored mainly for people, for women that work in a corporate environment, and may only be tailored for a particular segment of women. But I don't think that's the case. So do you want to just probably dispel that myth a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big believer in women being and, starting that journey on becoming the fully realized best versions of themselves. And I think we all have a different version of who we are and how we want to be and how we want to portray ourselves. And I'll give you the example of Oprah. So you know, Oprah is her own woman, right? And even her shadow has its own personality to it. I mean, she's just so fully embodied and self-expressed. And she is who she is. And I think that's the journey that we should all go down. And so I'm putting myself through that journey where I am starting to really just love who I am and, you know, starting to become more and more self-expressed in the way that I want to be. But I also want to create that same space for women. So I'm starting to become more and more unapologetic and fulfilled about me being polished and articulate as I am, because I like that about myself. But at the same time, what I'm saying is, if that's not what success means to you and that's not what fully embodied means to you, then you need to go down the path of being fully self-expressed in the personality that you have. So, for example, I don't have Oprah's personality and I could never do. But if, you know, if Oprah had a movement like this, I'd be part of it. Yep, I'd be there in spades because she's fully expressed and fully comfortable with who she is. Yep. And so to answer your question, The Remarkable Woman is a movement for all women who want to live a more remarkable life, who want to be empowered personally, professionally, and financially, who believe in closing the gender pay gap and believe in smashing the glass ceiling, not just externally in the world, in the workplace, but also internally for self-doubt, because we all experience that. I know that now. And so what The Remarkable Woman offers is this network of mentors where there's no awkwardness in approaching them. They're all there ready to help you. You could even pop on and say, "Hey, Andy, does 2 o'clock suit you okay? I've got a couple of questions to ask you." And you're there because you want to be there. Yeah. You're there because you volunteered to be a mentor. I don't need to, read 101 blogs on how to approach a mentor and how to curate my message so you'll respond to me.
Well, we won't go down that rabbit hole about mentors, because that thing, that does my head in. Right? Because it's a very intimidating and very overwhelming thing to consider. You know, how do you do it? Where do you go? How should you, what should your pitch be? You know, what are you asking for? What are you asking for? Oh my God, like what? So,
and it's a gigantic barrier to entry, one that you will spend hours curating, hours thinking about, months thinking about before you finally do something about it. So there's no barriers to entry. You could contact any mentor anytime and get them to invest in you because they're there volunteering to help you. But we also find out what your goals are, and we've got over 1,000 online courses that women can use to upskill and invest in themselves. Wow. And we take it a step further because whilst that's phenomenal, again, I know from personal experience that I will go, "That's great, I'm going to do it." And then I'll never do it.
and that goes across both genders, absolutely.
Oh, massively. You know, I mean, procrastination. And for all the want there is in the world versus execution, right? There's a cliff between differences. And so we actually speak with our members and say, well, based on what I know about you, these are the top five that you've got to start on, and I'm going to get you cracking on that. And so we've got the courses. And the other thing that we do that I think is really exciting is whilst we're working towards closing the gender pay gap, we've got a really cool gender pay gap discount portal. So we call it the Purse Power Portal because it's giving women more purse power. And so any woman who is on the platform can go and get 30% off movie tickets, can go and get 5% off their groceries. So I'm not allowed to name them. Actually, no, I am. I'm allowed to say Woolworths. So there you go. And there's another very big grocery store that you can get 5% off as well. 5% off your petrol at Caltex, Woolworths.
Absolutely awesome.
Yep. And, you know, 10% off Lorna Jane, and just so many, you know, fun things. But if you fully use that to its greatest extent, so if you start using that like you would your debit card, you will save up to $5,400 a year. Oof, it's incredibly significant. Yeah. So what I would say to you to answer your question in my very long-winded way, this is a movement that is for all women. I don't care whether you're a student, whether you're a stay-at-home mum, whether you're a senior-level executive or anything in between. All I care about is helping you be your fully realized, most remarkable self, just as I am trying to be that for me. So you don't need to be like me. You don't need to speak like me. You just need to want the best for you, and we'll welcome you with open arms.
It's exciting. It's fantastic. I'll get on the phone to Jess, my wife, on the way home today and go, go on here, go and check it out. But it's exciting. And as I said before, I think, yes, it's all nice, and you can sit back as a spectator and say, well, that's a nice thing that's being done for women, and good on them. But the impact, the benefits that can come out of this for everybody is just, it's not measurable. It's just incredible what the potential is there. And maybe actually one thing before we wrap up really quickly, because talking about that visual of equality and equity.
Yeah.
And just understanding that women need to be put into a position to be equal.
Yes.
In order for the next step to take place. Do you just want to quickly touch on that as well before we wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. So I get this question a lot on, you know, Shivani, why the remarkable woman for women? Men would love this too. I mean, men need, you know, a tribe and so forth. And we've got a lot of male mentors, but the beneficiaries of the change, the members, are only women.
Hmm.
And that question extends to workplaces. Well, Shivani, we all want equality, which means the same for me and if I was a man, and the same for a woman. So why do we have this Women in Senior Leadership program at work? Why do we have an exec role that's coming up and we've been told that we prefer that a woman apply? Because that's not equality. Equality would be men and women can apply. And that's where the conversation of equity and equality comes into place. And I've seen this this visual around the internet a lot, and it really, really resonated with me. So I'm going to try to describe it verbally that I think really depicts what equity is. And as you said really easily, really well, actually, I'm going to steal that. Thank you. Is women need to be put in a position to experience equality, to put someone in a position to experience equality. Sometimes you've got to propel their start point. So I want you to imagine that there is a fence. And you and I are both standing there. We're both looking over that fence and we're watching a football game. We've got the same fence. The fence is the same height. We're both standing there as two equals watching the game. There's only one slight problem. You're a lot taller than me. So you're a full head over the fence. Your eyes are fitting very, very comfortably over the fence and you can see the whole game. Now, I am a lot shorter than you. My eyes don't fit over the fence and I need to stand on my absolute tippy toes to see over it. And I'm constantly bouncing up and down and I'm really not getting everything. How would we make me equal to you? I'd literally need a leg up. And so I would need to stand on a little platform so that I can also see equally to you. You didn't get the platform. I did. And you might say to me, well, that's not equality. You got a platform. I want a platform. But you were already ahead in the first place. And that's what equity means. And to use that in the workplace example, in the business world example, women need that platform because men are already ahead. Don't believe me? Only 13% of ASX 200 companies have a woman at the helm. That we are more likely to have a John or a David or an Andrew be the CEO of an organization than a woman be senior leader. It, you know, and so men are already ahead. Give women the platform, give women the leg up. That is equity in practice to achieve equality.
I think that's something that everybody can have a think about. And I think that's a great place to end this conversation off because I've got a lot of thinking to do, but it's fantastic. So Shivani, thank you very, very much. And I look forward to seeing where the remarkable woman goes, where you go.
Thank you.
And no doubt there's a lot of exciting things happening in the future. So thank you.
Thank you, Andy. It's been so wonderful to speak with you.
Thanks, everyone. If you want to learn more about Shivani, you can go to the show notes over at andysocial.net. I'll have everything that we discussed, all the links and resources, all dumped in the show notes, as with every episode of the Andy Social podcast. You can also go to theremarkablewoman.com.au, where you can get a real
understanding, have a bit of a sticky beak of what Shivani is doing. And for you guys, meaning blokes, meaning guys, dudes, males, people like me, go and have a look. Take the effort to go and have a sticky beak and see what Shivani's up to and what she's created, because we all know somebody. We've got a wife, a sister, a mother, an auntie, a grandmother. We've got friends. We've got people that we care about. And I think that by having a quick look and seeing what Shivani has created, we can pass this on to other people that have got dreams, have got ideas, things that they want to do and might be held back by fears, or actually might be held back by, you know, tangible limitations in their industry, in their workplace. And Shivani's community that she's created, this support network with access to mentors and people of influence and people that have achieved great things, you know, we need to expose more people that we care about to what Shivani's doing. So go to theremarkablewoman.com.au, go and check that out. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you've got any questions, please let me know. And I've got all of Shivani's contact details as well. And I'm sure she'll love to hear from you also. But that's it, folks. Before we wrap it up, really, really quickly, if you want to support the podcast, you can do so in a whole range of different ways. You know, buy merchandise, share these episodes around, reviews, messages of encouragement, suggesting guests. Lots of that's been happening recently, so thank you so much. If you want to just support me in general, there's a self-starter podcast, selfstarter.com.au. There's the band, lord.net.au as well, and there's merchandise over there. We've got a new album coming out soon as well, so there's heaps of stuff happening. And any support that you can give, small or big, goes a hell of a long way. Speaking of Lord, before we wrap it up, two shows for 2018, September 22nd, Saturday, September 22nd at Max Watts in Melbourne. We're headlining the Metal United Down Under Festival. And Saturday, November 3rd at the Ballface Stag, we are headlining day two of the Steel Assassins Festival. And you can get tickets for both of those shows through MoshTix. And I believe OzTix are also doing tickets for the Melbourne show as well. If you want to make it really easy for yourself, you can just go to the shows tab on either the andysocial.net or the lord.net.au websites, and we'll have all the ticketing information there. But if you get lost, send me a message. I'll help you find your way. But that's it, folks. That's another episode in the bag. Thank you, as always, for supporting. It means a hell of a lot. Another great episode and another great guest, and I'm really looking forward to next week. Until then, folks, take care. Ta-ta.
Larry, please.